Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Before I introduce you to today's guest, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsors, the people over at Markham Search, LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, and they make today's show possible. So a special thanks to them. Now, today, in the midst of all the chaos going on in the world and all the unforeseen circumstances that many of us find ourselves in, I thought what better guest to bring you than Rudhir Krishtel. Rudhir started off his career for 15 years practicing as an attorney, going from being a federal clerk to a patent litigation attorney to in-house patent counsel at Apple. And eventually, during the midst of all of this, he studied yoga and mindfulness and wound up creating his own Krishtel coaching practice, where he now helps and consults with attorneys and law firms on how to find more balance. And Rudhir, I'm so happy to have you here today because I think today's topic is so timely about how do we, A, make a career transition much like you did if we're not fulfilling our passion, and B, once we get there, how do we ensure our success in it? So thanks so much for joining us today.
Jennifer, I really appreciate you having me, and thank you for everyone that's listening. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely. And so tell us, Rudhir, a little bit about your journey. How do you go from investing the time, the money, the education, all of that into becoming an attorney and then pivoting and doing something wildly different?
Yeah, it's really challenging. You know, after practicing for so many years, you really end up identifying with it. You start seeing your future down that practice. And at the same time, I started facing and noticing that it just didn't feel right anymore. There was something about the practice that created a little bit of friction rather than that feeling of just moving forward and having that sort of energetic flow, you know, really feeling good about it. And as I started noticing the friction with the practice, I started noticing around me, with the deepening of my yoga and meditation practice, I started to notice the behaviors of the people around me in the practice. And I started to just see a bit of a distance from it, I guess. And notably that the legal practice and many occupations, actually, there's just a lot of stress in that workplace. And when you notice stress, obviously it's a part of a difficult profession. So that's not to say that we can just necessarily, you know, avoid and evade stress. But what was interesting is that this cycle between work causing stress and then stress ultimately impacting people's relationships with themselves, with their colleagues, and then ultimately the work product itself. And so now there's this interesting cycle where work causes stress and then stress impacts the work. And it was just sort of a cycle that was happening in the workplace and no one was talking about. It was table stakes. Of course, we're stressed. And then, of course, it has an impact. And I just felt like, well, this needs to be a dialogue that I want to actually start to have. And the more I saw it, the more I noticed it, the more I saw the impact, I felt more compelled and drawn to doing something about it. And what that was, I had no idea. But I just felt like it's time to leave and it's time to make some sort of a shift. And so that's sort of paying attention to that tension, wanting to do something about it was really the spark that sort of helped invite me to make a shift out of the practice.
Yeah. And the reason I wanted to have you on, Rudhir, because I love your story. And I've heard so many people that I've spoken with of the last 4 or so 5 months during the midst of the pandemic and what's been happening in the world with the riots and with the protests. What I've been observing and in the conversations I've been having, I've noticed a lot of people are considering shifting entirely, taking a complete 180 from whatever it is that they've done before. And I think so many of us are, number one, we're afraid to take that leap. Number two, we don't even know how to go about it, and let alone number three, how to be successful. Okay, so one, could I even take the leap? Two, you know, what would it look like to take the leap? And three, how do I even learn how to be successful in a new career? What was that like for you going from being an attorney to becoming now an executive coach and consultant?
It's It's very scary. I mean, it's very difficult. And so that fear that people have is very real. You know, it's when you get to the edge of the diving board and you start feeling that nervousness, you just want to take a few steps back and take a breath. You know, it's sort of a very scary experience. And I think what people may find is that the values of and the goals of the organization they're in aren't necessarily aligning with who they are. They feel like they want to do something different. They feel like they want to be something different. And when there's that friction and that potential tension, then it starts making people feel a little bit clamped down on in themselves. And so it's time to start understanding and unearthing, what are your values? What is it that you really want? What is the change you want to see in the world? And now how do I start going about to make that possible?
And what advice would you give somebody? I know in your position, here you go from a lot of attorneys that I'm aware of make several $100,000 a year to a practice where you have no safety blanket, you have no security blanket. What would your advice be to somebody out there who's considering making that transition and maybe they don't even have a security blanket, maybe they don't even have a savings? Do you still make that leap or do you grin and bear it and deal with feelings of burnout and misery in a job you don't love?
Yeah, I think the first step is actually visioning what you want. And then the steps unfold. You can't sit there and try to problem solve the feeling that we're having in the moment, because again, you'll start butting up against, well, how do I pay for it? And how do I budget for it? And I can't, that's not possible. So let me just stay where I am. And so I'd rather just start envisioning the world that you want to see, envisioning this position that you really want. What is it that you're actually going for? And then the steps start unfolding. When I think about design thinking or, design thinking, the first step is actually empathizing, listening, and understanding. What is it that you want? What is the difficulty? What's the challenge? Where do you see the world? Where do you want to be? And I think that's a first step to start understanding. Just like any problem at work right now, if your team or your department or the group they're in has a problem, they set a goal for a year, 3 years, 5 years, and they start iterating towards that. I think that is a way to go about this unfolding for people as individuals also.
Yeah, I think that's a great piece of advice. And it's funny that you mentioned that. Just for myself recently, I love to set my daily intentions. I think that's one of all of our defaults is we kind of bump into our day. We kind of run, we get a running start. We're trying to take care of kids, dog, cat, coffee, husband, significant other, whoever it might be, right? And then we're running through our day and we never pause and actually think to set up our day. So I've been personally a huge fan of setting up daily intentions. And actually every Sunday I set up weekly intentions and every first of the month, my monthly intentions. Though the one thing, Rude, here that I wasn't personally doing and that I would encourage all of our listeners and viewers to do is to actually take the time to visualize the big things you want. And in fact, a teacher years ago taught me not even just visualize, but virtualize it, taste it, smell it, sense it. See what it feels like when you're in that new role. Yes, first envision it. And then once you've envisioned it, what does it feel like? How does it taste? How does it smell? What does your day look like in that new role? And then when you start to spend 5 minutes, even a day, virtualizing that experience, it really is astounding the miracles you can create in your life in an unprecedented short period of time once you're clear on what it is you want.
Jennifer, I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, that's exactly what I did, is really actually spend a few months after I left my role, spent about 6 months coming up with the ideal job description. I said, if this is what I want to do, like, what is it that I want to do? And I wrote it down and I started envisioning myself in that role. And I wrote it down with a description and a salary. I wrote all of it down. And I said, here's the position that I would want to be in. And I'm literally in that position now. I mean, it's not anything short of what feels like to me as a miracle. And I obviously now I support people in moving down this path. And so I see this type of miracle unfold all the time. You know, weekly, I'm hearing people talking to me about how their dreams are coming true or the thing that they want is actually happening. And it's the practice that you've identified is definitely a part of it, which is just being very clear and understanding what is it that you actually want. I think a lot of people don't often give themselves the permission to clearly identify what they want. But companies do it all the time. They have a 5-year and a 10-year strategy. They bring it down to a 1-year strategy. And just like you said, they have 6 months and then 3 months and then 1 week goals. And we do that on behalf of our businesses, or we work for companies that sort of move us through that process. But some of us aren't willing to give ourselves that permission that you give yourself, which is to say, hey, here's what I want. And if I want to do that in 5 years, well, then here's what I want to do in 1 year. And then here's what I need to do this week to start moving towards that goal. And I think being very clear about what that goal is, envisioning it, thinking about it, you know, really sensing, smelling, feeling it, it really invites people to naturally start taking the steps to move towards it.
Yeah, and then something else, if I may, that I learned just last week, there's another show that I host that's called The Coalition for Global Unity on AwakeTVNetwork.live. And I've had many wonderful leaders and thought leaders and spiritual leaders from around the world. And one of the people on the show was Dr. Dane Heer from Access Consciousness. He's one of the co-founders of Access Consciousness. And he said something that boggled my mind the other day that I had never thought of on the show. He said, when you feel something, or when you think you want something, or when you're having an upsetting situation, ask yourself, who does this belong to? And Ruthir, I kid you not, I've been doing this since I learned this technique from Dane. I think he joined us on July 6th, and you can find the replay of it on Awake. And what I love about this is when you think about it from a job hunting standpoint, or, you know, our life goal standpoint, how often do we actually ask ourselves, who does this belong to? Does my desire to be an attorney, does that belong to me? Does it belong to my parents? Does it belong to my grandparents? Does it belong to my culture? And for you and whatever you're doing, does it belong to my significant other? Who does this belong to? And when you start to ask that, you start to notice a lot of the thoughts we have, a lot of the feelings and emotions, they don't actually belong to us. And when it's almost kind of like you have this beautiful masterpiece covered in sand and dust and dirt. And the more you say, who does this belong to? You're kind of wiping away the stuff that is no longer you. And then the real you is this luminous, light-filled being that has the capacity to shine brightly and do what you were meant to do in the world. But first, you have to keep unveiling what isn't you in order to discover that.
Yeah, a simpler way of that same practice. My wife and I have this practice of just constantly identifying what we want to do versus what we should be doing. And so we just take a piece of paper, on the left side, we write down what we want, draw a line in the middle, on the right side, we write down the shoulds. And we actually just eliminate the shoulds. We take out everything that we feel like we should do and only pursue the things that we want to do. And I think at first, when I have clients engage in this exercise, it's very unclear, you know, like, well, I don't know what I want. You know, it's a simple first question. Well, what do you want? You know, they're like, well, I want to work with you, and I heard great things, and okay, great, get on the first phone call. So what is it that you want? And people just, I don't know, no one's ever really asked me. And so this decision on first identifying and getting clarity on what you want versus all of the things that your parents, your culture, your community, you know, your schooling, all of those things that they place on you as shoulds versus the thing that you want. I think there's this trusting and unearthing that what you want is amazing. It's beautiful. It matters. It's significant. And it's worth actually spending a little bit of time allowing that to unfold.
You're going to have to laugh with me here for a second, Ruthir. I was thinking about something when you were saying you and your wife have your list of your wants and your shoulds. And what immediately came on my mind is kind of like household chores of like, you should take out the trash, because that trash will actually build up. So I do have a funny little aside for all of our listeners and viewers right now. One thing that you can do to be empowered when you're in a situation, whether it's a job, a relationship, maybe a home, something that you don't want to be that way, it should not be this way. I should not have to do whatever this task is that my boss is delegating to me. One thing that can be very powerful and set you up for success when you do make that transition and pursue your passion is to choose the thing that you're doing in that moment. Even if perhaps taking out the trash, filling out that Excel spreadsheet, doing summarizing, whatever it is not your favorite thing. In order to be able to get to the place to have it all, first you have to learn to accept things the way they are rather than resisting them, because otherwise you're going to spend the rest of your life resisting the things you don't like. And then that's going to create a greater chasm between what you want and where you want to go. Does that make sense? I felt like that might be worth mentioning because my head went to, I don't want to take out the trash. Don't make me do it. I know I should.
Well, you know, I have this vision 5 years from now of actually being with my wife. And if that has to be true, then I better take out the trash. So that's taking that 5-year dream and bring it back to this week's steps. But it's like, house better be clean because I want to stay with my wife. And so.
Exactly. See, that's the thing. You got to find, we're not saying throw the baby out with the bathwater. We're not saying quit your job tomorrow. We're saying take the time to live a life filled with passion that's miraculous, there are going to be some hurdles. There are going to be some shoulds that you may have the opportunity to embrace and choose as they are along the way. And another worthwhile point to mention to our viewers and listeners is that when you go through hurdles, obstacles, pain, suffering, like even for you, Ruti, I can't imagine what the roadblocks might have been like, whether it's people in your life, even your significant other saying, you can't do this, this should not be this way. Those are all opportunities that on the other side of that is a really great miracle that you can then receive what it is you really want. But first, you kind of have to earn it and to put in that energy to be able to receive all the good stuff that you desire, right?
Excuse me. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly right. And what was interesting about my path is that when I left the career for 15 years, I decided to take 1 year off to process, understand, and allow what was next to unfold. And a lot of people don't have that luxury, but I felt like I needed to take that time. And in fact, my wife was the one that said, you need more than just a couple of weeks off. You take a year off, and I'm certain that you will figure out what's next. And that type of permission was not something I would even be willing to give myself. It's just time to take a break from that last career and allow the next one to unfold. And during that time, there's this concept or idea of the Japanese ikigai, which is the steps that you take to sort of unearth, you know, your purpose or how, where you are in the flow. And there's these four questions that it asks, which is, you know, what do you love? What do people need? What are the skills that are necessary? And then does it garner an income? Does it, you know, create some sort of a wage? And so when I went around my career path the first time around, you know, my father passed away early in my life. And when that happened, I thought, well, I have to go become a breadwinner and make money. And so what is the career path that would allow me to do that? And I sort of allowed, I answered the first question. And then the second question was, would people need it? And the answer, of course, was yes, you know, being an IP attorney, et cetera. And then it was, well, what are the skills that you need? So I gained those skills. And then finally, did I love it? And I can't really say I got on to loving it. I love the people that I worked with. I love the companies that I was a part of, but I'm not sure in a deep way I love the work. And so this time around, I investigated first what I love. And it's part of this. It's what do I want versus what I feel like I should. So I spent 6 months thinking about what I love. And part of that was, well, let me go train as a yoga instructor because I love yoga. Let me go train as a mindful instructor because I love mindfulness. I love the practice. Let me spend time with people I love being around. I sort of just unearthed love. What do I love? And through that, sort of unfolding this idea that, you know, in about 6 months of practicing yoga and meditation, I felt like I took 3 years off of, added 3 years to my life from where I was in the legal work. And I thought, man, lawyers, people in difficult careers need this. How can I offer this out to the world? And so then I started thinking, well, what are the skills that I would need to become this person that I want to be, offering places and spaces where people can dialogue around difficult conversation, offering well-being, offering stress reduction. How do I, you know, what are the skills that I would need to do that? So I trained as a coach, and then sort of thinking, well, would people want it? So I started asking people, would you want to feel, you know, as good as I'm feeling right now? Would you want to feel better in the practice? And I started learning that that's a thing. And the final question was the money. But, you know, I spent the first 15 years of my career having the three of those questions answered, and the last one, do I love it, sort of unanswered over 15 years. And so I thought, well, let me answer these first three. And then whether or not I get an income doing this work, let me just sort of trust this process. And sure enough, it unfolded. Definitely whatever I wanted to be earning, I'm earning now. I'm growing a team. I have a company. And it's because those first three questions I answered in spades. Am I doing something that I absolutely love? Do people need it? Are there certain skills that I can gain to offer it out? And then when those three were complete, I started offering these services out at a fee. And over time, of course, those fees evolved. But it was a different way of pursuing what I wanted, a different path than what we typically learn traditionally, which is get a degree. And then right outside of that degree, you should probably have a paying job associated with that education. It worked a little bit differently this time. And it's been an incredible path.
I have chills right now, Ruti. I think this is such an important, timely topic for everybody out there, because it's a fallacy to say that you can't have it all. I'll never forget, I was speaking at school in Culver City to a lot of middle school children about their futures. And one of the things that I always love to instill when I would speak to students is I would say, you can be or do anything you want. And this young boy tentatively raised his hand and he said, Ms. Till, can you please say that again? I don't understand what you're saying. And I said, you can be or do anything you want. And he kind of looked down at the ground and he said, Ms. Hill, nobody's ever said that to me before. And I think it's heartbreaking. Yes, like I know you're shaking your head right now for our podcast listeners who can't see it right here. And it is heartbreaking, but that's why we're doing things differently now. We're thinking about things differently. The world is changing. And I think the message is out there that anything is possible. Just like we thought this whole situation that we found ourselves in was impossible, we're finding out the impossible is both good and bad. It's all available to us. So anything is possible right now in this ripe time that we find ourselves in.
I completely agree. And I think that if you have some need or some change that you want to see in the world, I think what I started noticing was that I want to be having conversations around some of these topics that are difficult at work, you know, stress, tension, workplace relationships, issues revolving around race and gender, things that we wouldn't feel comfortable talking about at work. And I felt the growing need to have this dialogue. I realized over time that I'm not alone. And so the way that businesses work and the way that career paths work is that if you're able to service a need of, you know, 10, 15, 20, 50, 100 people, that's a business. And if you're thinking that these challenges and these problems that you face that you want to make a difference with, that you're alone in that feeling, that's where we want to step out a little bit, start understanding other people's problems, start noticing other people's pain points, who relates to you, because that's where I think a career path can unfold. That's where, for me, a business unfolded, which is just understanding that this difficulty, this challenge, the further up and more senior I got, the lonelier I felt in this practice, all of those challenges, I was not alone in. And now I service the same people that were having the challenges that I faced, you know, 3, 4, or 5 years ago.
Incredible, Ruthier. Well, on that note, are there any takeaways from today? Anything that we didn't get a chance to talk about? I know we had discussed the possibility of getting into how to be successful once you get the job. So we'll probably have to have you on another time to get into that episode. But were there any other takeaways regarding transitions or following your passion that you would love to leave our listeners and viewers with today?
I can't underestimate and underemphasize the power of persistence. This daily activity that you mentioned, waking up, writing down your intention, that to me was the most powerful aspect of this whole transition, which is no matter how difficult things got, no matter how challenged I felt, is waking every day and saying, I want to support, you know, 1,000, 50,000, 100,000 people in my life with the idea that their strength and their courage and their confidence come in part from their well-being, from feeling centered. That's where their strength comes from. And that I want to continue to share that message, and that I write that idea down to myself every day. And I wrote it down every day for the last many years. And that's literally what I do now. And so it's this importance of just taking daily steps, daily activity that in response to this intention that you speak out. And that, I think, is one of the most powerful things. And I hope that that helps support somebody that's listening out there, start to write things down, write down that they want, take a few steps every day and do it every day, because I'm be amazed to hear how that unfolds over the next few years.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant, Ruthier. And another thing I'd love to leave as a takeaway for people is the practice of gratitude. I know it ties into mindfulness and yogic practices. It is so easy right now to think about all the have-nots. I don't have this. I don't have that. I can't go out with my friends. This or that is lacking. And so a great practice that you could use to piggyback on what Ruthier just shared would be every morning when you wake up, write down one thing you're grateful for. And every night before you go to bed, write down one thing you're grateful for. And if you really want to get 5 million bonus gold points or gold stars, share it with somebody. You could share it with a friend, a significant other. There was a great project years ago I was familiar with called the 365 Grateful Project, where similarly, there was a woman, I'm drawing a blank on her name, but I talk about it in my book, 101 Spiritual Tools. And she basically was feeling depressed. She had a husband, she had kids, she was a photographer. And over the course of 365 days, she posted one picture a day of something that she was grateful for. And in doing so, it became a practice. And I remember I was feeling a little disheartened around that time too. I started that practice, went on for over 400 days, and still every single day do it. And especially in times like these where it's hard to find something you're grateful for, that's what makes it all the more powerful. When you set these intentions, you find little reasons to be grateful. It's really going to expand your capacity to receive even more the more that you're grateful for what you already have.
I agree more. I'm all in for gratitude practices. We have that practice in our house. Rather than ending the day talking about what was difficult today, we start with what worked out or what brought you joy. And I think it really allows to start attuning the mind and the body towards the things that bring you joy and actually starts moving you down that direction. So I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah. And a fun little aside, you made me think of it, Ruthie. I'm so glad you mentioned your family practices. That somebody had once shared with me about a gratitude jar. We used to have a gratitude jar in my office. Every time somebody's grateful, you would write something you're grateful for and put it in the jar. And then if you're having a tough day, whether it's the office or at home, you would draw something out of the gratitude jar that you might have forgotten you were grateful for. And so that's a really other fun practice. I don't know how we diverged here onto gratitude, but a little gratitude never hurt anybody, right?
No, this is great. This is exactly right. This is all the stuff. So hopefully people are paying attention and making these shifts, because this is really what it's all about.
Well, thanks so much, Ruthie. And tell people if they want to find out about Christelle Coaching and what you're doing and follow you, connect with you, use your services, where would they go to do so?
Yeah, Christelle.com is my website. You can Google Christelle Coaching. It's what comes up. I love connecting with people on LinkedIn and Instagram and Twitter. And so feel free to find me and reach out and stay connected. Really appreciate anybody ever reaching out for, you know, resolving any of the challenges that we talked about today.
Amazing, Ruthie. Thank you so much. And thank you to everybody out there tuning in now or in the future. I'm intending that each and every one of you, maybe you got one little pearl of wisdom from Ruthie that you can take out and apply into your life. And that's our intention. That's why we do this show every single week, is just add a little bit more light in our lives in the midst of this dark time we find ourselves in. Let's control the controllables. And if you're not following your life's purpose or passion, perhaps now you have a little bit of an insight or a glimmer of a way of how to get there. And if you missed any portion of today's show, you can always go to the Facebook Live page, the Facebook page for LA Talk Radio. You'll be able to rewatch this video on their Facebook Live, on their page. And you can also go to iTunes. Later in the week, the episode will be available on Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. And you can also follow us on Facebook on Get Yourself the Job, where we share other articles and content. And for any of you out there who are struggling with writing your resume, next week we're going to have resume writer Jill Grindel joining us. It's been a long time since we've done an episode on resume writing. And I figured with so many of us out there unemployed, it's a good time to get out there and dust off your resume. So thank you so much for joining us today and tuning in. I'm Jennifer Hill, and it's been a pleasure to have you here with us.
All right. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thanks, Ruthie.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.